We're joined now by our regular political analyst to discuss the delay indictment and other political developments, E.J. Dionne, a columnist for The Washington Post and senior fellows at the Brookings Institution, and David Brooks, columnist for The New York Times. Good to see both of you.
Good to see you.
Now, DeLay will relinquish his post, but we've now learned that Congressman Roy Blunt of Missouri will take his place, but DeLay plans to hold on to his congressional seat. Is this the end of his career as we knew it, whether he's convicted or not, David?
I think it's likely it's the end of his career in the leadership. For a number of months and maybe even a couple of years, most Republicans in the House have been thinking, you know, this guy skates close to the edge. The idea that he's the hammer, that he's this ruthless guy, that's not true. He's a normal guy. He treats his members fairly. But they're tired of him skating close to the edge. And they have been talking for months about getting this guy, Roy Blunt, who's very popular, very well-liked, up in that job just to loosen the baggage on the party. And so I think they will be unhappy to give DeLay back his old job because, you know, he's just one bit of trouble after another.
EJ, your thoughts on this and also what it means as the Republicans try to muscle through the president's agenda?
Well, I think they've lost a lot of muscle in the last couple of months already. I think this is what happens when a party of ideas becomes a political machine, when a culture of money becomes paramount, and when political success is dependent upon raising mounds of special interest money. I mean, the basic facts here are not in dispute that Mr. DeLay converted, and we'll find out whether it's legal or illegal, corporate money into campaign cash so he could pack the state legislature in Texas with Republicans, who could then change abruptly congressional district lines to give Republicans more seats in Congress. I think what we're seeing here are the costs of a politics that sees no limits, and it will challenge a lot of principled conservatives to decide where they stand on this culture of money. And I think it's part of a narrative of, you know, whether you want to call it corruption or whether you simply want to call it money politics that's already started to build. The indictment of Jack Abramoff, who had once been the lobbyist who was once close to Mr. DeLay, David Safavian, the White House top procurement official who was indicted. I think you're seeing a larger narrative here, and that's why I agree with David on one thing, that Republicans probably will want to throw over some baggage over time because this is a problem for them.
So if this is a cost, what is the effect of that?
Well, I think it clearly weakens the Republican Party in the short term. But I think it's the real question here is, does this indictment open a door to discuss all kinds of relationships between money and politics in the city since the Republicans took over the Congress in 1994. I think President Bush took a risk today when he essentially embraced Tom DeLay because I think, you know, the president himself is going to have to defend some things which he may in the long run not want to defend.
Well, the president, at least through his spokesman today, continued to defend Tom DeLay. He said that he's a good friend and an effective leader. How will this reach back to the White House?
First of all, he's an effective leader, Tom DeLay. He and Bush have never been friends. The relationship between those two has never been close. They're very different sorts of people. But the rule is in these cases that you defend somebody in your party. I think that's fair to do. Just on Tom DeLay, you know, I've never been a fan of his. I've long wanted to get out of town. I think it'd be good for the country. I can't figure out in anything that's been written today what he did. A committee that he's loosely affiliated with did something. But what did Tom DeLay exactly do in some conspiracy to transfer this money is something that nobody, and not the prosecutor or anybody else, has answered. So I don't want us to get out in front of the idea that this guy is going to be convicted. I think we're a long way from that. The legal thing, it's much murkier than a lot of the hysteria around it is suggesting. The political thing, though, does seem to me clear. He's been weakened by a whole succession of scandals. And then the other thing he's been weakened by is a feeling of shame in the Republican Party that they've become a big spending party with no sense of priorities. And Tom DeLay is the author of that. He's someone who I think many Republicans now believe privately has no real conservative principles, but just is hungry for power and will do whatever it takes to give Republicans more seats in those chairs. And that means spending a lot of money. He said something a couple of weeks ago that there was no fat to cut in the federal government, which caused Republican heads to be shaking. And so this comes at a time when he's weak on philosophic grounds, aside from the long-term weakness he's had on the sleaze issue.
Well, you mentioned the long string of scandals. I wonder if given that, and also since the investigation is also underway into the financial dealings of Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, if this pretty much ensures that the twin themes of corruption and competence will sort of take center stage in the midterm elections.
Oh, I think absolutely the Democrats are going to do something like the Contract of America. Remember, the Contract of America, which Gingrich did in 94, was an attempt to highlight the sleaze in what was seen as the Democratic House, the post office scandal and all that stuff. And they had a whole series of things like term limits designed to show we're not sleazy, we'll get rid of this. The Democrats will come up with something like that.
EJ?
I think you're right that incompetence and corruption, there's even a it sounds like a slogan to me, and I think that is going to be the issue. And I think there's also a question of whether there is a pattern here where Republicans basically are not a small government party. It's a question of whose interests does the government serve. The Republicans will spend money to support their own interest groups to get reelected in order to cut taxes further on other interest groups that support them. So I think there's a kind of philosophical link to the question of whether we're talking about incompetence and corruption. And I also think there's a whole attitude toward government that if you respect government, you are less likely to appoint cronies. You're more likely to want government to work. So the paradoxically, the party that is actually more sympathetic to government may actually be more careful in trying to preserve it from corruption.
This might be a stretch in Boss Daily Chicago.
Well, the Democrats are already talking about the stench of corruption. And to the extent that that continues, what role will DeLay play? He's at a press conference this afternoon saying that he will continue to work to push the president's agenda. Will he be working in behind the curtain somewhere back, backstage?
I think the Republicans, as they get closer, the one thing they'll say privately is, well, it's a good thing we got rid of him so many months before the midterms. I think they will try to distance themselves from him.
You know, on the question of competence this week, the hearings with former FEMA director Mike Brown, he pointed fingers at the Louisiana governor, at the mayor of New Orleans, but he didn't really mention the Bush administration directly. But I wonder when people see these hearings, if they see in some way, EJ, the face of the administration, or rather someone who represents a small agency,
right,
small but important agency.
No, I think that's important. And also in the course of defending himself, he did try to say, look, I tried to warn the White House that something bad was happening. I think what you're seeing now is in journalism a question of, are there more Michael Browns in this government? Time magazine had a very powerful piece this week suggesting that there were other political cronies planted around the government. You know, the idea of...
But, you know, it's interesting because Republicans note that they could have written the same piece in previous administrations run by Democrats.
Right, but I think the question is this different? Senator Tom Harkin said the other day, I can't understand why they put political cronies in FEMA. Isn't that why God invented the Department of Commerce? In other words, yes, there's a tradition of appointing, having, giving patronage to some in your party. Putting them in critical places like FEMA or procurement raises a whole different level of issue.
When I saw Brown, I was reflecting on what a scapegoat he had become. Maybe he was incompetent. But, you know, he's a normal guy. He was treated as if this incompetent monster. And I happen to think the point he made about the failure of the local authorities is an important point. This was a failure of all levels of government. And as NPR has demonstrated, among many other news organizations, you know, there were Louisiana agencies, New Orleans agencies specifically designed to deal with this problem. This was the most anticipated problem hurricane we've had in American history, and it was a complete failure.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. Good to talk to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
E.J. Dionne is a columnist for The Washington Post and senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. David Brooks is a columnist for The New York Times.